The Georgia State Legislature commissioned a statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to be erected on the grounds of the Capitol back in the summer of 2015. Sadly, the artist chosen for the project, Andy Davis, was killed in a motorcycle accident shortly after accepting the commission. Eventually, a new artist was selected to take on the job, and on Monday morning, the work will finally be unveiled. We spoke with the sculptor, Martin Daw, about crafting King's likeness. I was hoping you could talk about how the sculpture came together.
Well, you know, first of all, it was an enormous responsibility. It's only the eighth sculpture going on the Capitol grounds. It's the first non-elected representative ever going on the Capitol grounds, and the first African American. And this will be there for quite a while. So a great responsibility. Andy had selected a photograph of MLK coming out of the Montgomery Courthouse in 1958, and he sort of liked the pose. And I loved it. It's a beautiful contrapposto with MLK just stepping off. So contrapposto, you have a weight shift and a wonderful S shape to the body. So we used that as the inspiration image. And I sculpted a maquette, which is a mock-up for, which is a sculpture lingo for mock-up. So we did that and had that approved. And then we had to go through a long process to figure out what size to make it. The sculptures at the Capitol vary from almost life-size to 10 feet tall. So we took the maquette and photoshopped it into the site. We did a large cutout at 8 feet tall and placed it there and walked around it, just trying to figure out what the right scale would be, and decided on 8 feet.
8 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you said the photo was taken in 1958, so mm-hmm. He was very young.
Yeah, yeah. So we used that as the inspiration image for the gesture. Then I sculpted him at the age of 35 from 1964. That was all the imagery that I used. And it's the most difficult portrait I've ever done in my whole career.
Talk about having a giant... staring over your shoulder.
Really? Well, and he just, a lot of times when I do portraits of famous people, I look at political cartoons of them to see how a cartoonist captures something about cartoon, you know, capturing what they look like. There are no good cartoons of MLK. He has a wonderful distinctive profile, but front on, he has a very complicated shape to his face.
What makes it so?
It has the gestures in the forms. There are a lot of indents around the temple and some on the sides of the face that you can't really see in photographs. I ended up using a video loop of an interview with him over and over again in slow motion because the pictures didn't tell you the whole story. So he has had a very difficult face to capture, and I think that's why so many people have had a hard time with it.
Interesting.
So watching the video loop over and over again, I was able to see forms move in space back and forth and back and forth until I was able to kind of capture exactly what he looked like.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about this very visual process, kind of a window into the crafting, if you will, of your art. I was wondering if maybe you also played audio of his speeches.
Well, I had four different DVDs that I would play all the time. To get a sense of, well, of course I wanted to know more than I already knew about him. So watching all those, and then, yes, just to have him in the room with me to be inspired by it. Because the other, if you look at 20 pictures of MLK, five of them you wouldn't know it was him. There's a couple I could show you. If I showed you out of context and asked you who that was, you'd say, I can't tell who that is.
And you think that's because of the complexity of his facial structure?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that made it really, really challenging. And I'm sure different people have a different idea of what he looks like.
And so much of that, I would think, as with the Dalai Lama, it's perhaps when people think of him, they think of an aura, a countenance, if you will.
A presence, an amazing presence, do you know? And so in deciding on some of the subtle details of the pose, my language is body language. That's what I communicate in, you know, in doing figurative work. And you can change the whole feeling of a piece by the way the neck is set. Have you ever watched the TV with the sound off, and you can tell what people are saying and how they're feeling? You can tell their character. You can tell a lot about them with no sound. So that's what I study is body language, really. You move the angle of the head 2 degrees and it changes it completely. So we have him looking slightly to his left with his head off, a little bit to the left, and then his eyes are looking a little more left. Because when you're not looking straight at somebody, you know, when you're talking to somebody and you look up to the side, it's because you're thinking. Mm-hmm. So when you look at him with his eyes off to the side, my response is, what's he thinking? And that, you know, that gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
He's looking at MLK Boulevard from this place.
Would you talk about the placement of the sculpture? And first off, it being on the grounds of the state capital of Georgia. I mean, our history here is fraught.
Absolutely. I think we live in a day and a time where we're feeling some regret for the fact we aren't further along. But this statue has amazing symbolism because, as I just said, he's looking at MLK Boulevard. Can you imagine as a teenager if someone said, this road next to the Capitol is going to be named after you? So I think we have to put ourselves in the perspective of how he grew up and how far we really have come, you know, a good ways. There's still, of course, a long way to go, which is what we seem to be concentrating on now. But I think this could be a symbol for how far we have come, do you know?
One would only hope. Any discussion of the MLK statue must include the tragic death of sculptor Andy Davis, who was killed in an accident in 2015. Did you have any connection with him at all?
No, I didn't know him at all, no.
So how were you approached to take the commission?
Well, for the first round, they didn't do this, but for the second round, they had hundreds of applicants. So they went through the traditional vetting process.
They being?
The Capitol Standards Arts Commission, which was Representative Smyrie, and the governor's assistant, Carrie Ashby, and Eric Tidwell from the King Center. So they did interviews, studio visits, before they selected me.
What's it like when your client is the State House?
Well, specifically working with Representative Smyrie and Carrie Ashby and Eric Tidwell was a joy. So I tried to ignore that other pressure. Maybe. Do you know, I did wake up a lot of times. It seemed to always be 4 o'clock in the morning in a little bit of a cold sweat. Do you know, the goal while you're sculpting is to be as objective as you can be. You want to look at it a year later, 10 years later, and say, that worked. So to be able to do that while you're working on it, you kind of have to create a little bit of a distance, as if you were somebody else looking at it.
Well, speaking of the distance and looking at it, I'm curious about the decision for 8 foot tall, 8 for making the statue 8 feet tall.
Right, right. It's 100% based on how it looked in that particular site. It's on the northeast corner of the Capitol. The ground level is about 10 feet above street level, so it's a natural theater. You'll always see it from far away. So when we tried the different sizes in Photoshop, it felt like it almost looks life size from a block away at 8 feet tall, because we naturally see a figure and think of it as life size. The Herman Talmadge is 9 or 10 feet tall. The Jimmy Carter is just barely life size. So without any trees around it and the large, I mean, it's an enormous building behind it. Dr. Charles Drew for the Drew Charter School for Mrs. Cousins, and I made it twice life-size, the head. I made it enormous, almost 3-foot head, and they were so worried about it being too big. Then we put it in front of a 70,000 square foot, 4-story contemporary high school, and it shrank. They loved it once it was in. So in my studio, it looked too big. I didn't want them to see it in the studio. But once you put something on the site, almost subconscious perspective happens to you that you don't really aren't aware of. So the 8 feet, 9 feet felt too tall and 7 feet felt too short. It's like, you know, Goldilocks or something. You know?
Under the gold dome.
Yeah. Well, and one of the, when he's placed, when people get as close as they can to him, he'll be on a 3-foot base, and you take a picture of his head straight on, his head, the dome will be right behind it. So we've looked at a lot of things before deciding on the location and the scale.
Was there anything on the site before this statue?
There was. There was a small sculpture, and it was a little bit out of scale for the corner. You probably never even noticed it. It was done back in the 70s by the Black Caucus, and it's a interpretive piece about figures climbing through kind of a labyrinth to just explain about the civil rights struggle. But it was only about, oh, I don't know, just over 3 feet tall on a little 2-foot base. As part of the whole process, that piece, and Representative Smyrou was on the committee that placed it there, too. So as part of the whole process and the budget, because all the money was privately raised, the government did not pay for it. I don't know if I'd mentioned that before, but yeah, all the money was privately raised. But they included moving that piece and redoing a beautiful site for it just on the other side of the Magnolia. So it has a more intimate, enclosed space between the Capitol stairs and this old, beautiful Magnolia. And then the MLK will go on the corner. So that took a while to get through all that to make sure that that would be okay. But I think once they saw the photoshopping of MLK on that corner, putting him hidden in a niche next to the stairs would have been a little offensive, actually.
That would be insulting.
Yeah.
And as you say, when you come off the expressway, most people are going to see this from their car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Majority of people will see it from the car.
So it should be towering.
Yeah.
The juxtaposition, the very idea of MLK sharing a lawn with Herman Talmadge is striking.
Absolutely.
To say the least.
Absolutely.
How did you deal with that?
I hope mine's a better sculpture. The Herman Talmadge was done by Stephen Thomas, who wasn't really known for his figurative work, and the anatomy's a little off, so I hope. He's no longer alive, but I shouldn't disparage him in public. I think it's great to see them together. And you know, they are the width of the Capitol lawn apart. And you know, most of the a lot of the sculptures done of MLK, he's got a little bit of a furrowed brow. The one in D.C. Especially. So in this one, it feels hopeful. He's stepping off. He's not in a big stride. He's just stepping off, and the position of his hand out just a little bit, as if he's stepping off, and then his head a certain way. It feels like it implies the future. So you look at him and you wonder what he's thinking, and it implies the future. So It's not this authoritative, I want to tell you what to think kind of sculpture. It's much more internal, I think, when you look at it. And for a lot of people, it will represent a lot of gains that were made in the last 50 years.
The statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is being unveiled on the grounds of the Georgia Capitol on Monday the 28th. Martin Dahl, thank you very much for talking with us.
No, my pleasure, Lois. Thank you.